All right, my friends, it is that time again, the Build Show podcast. This is my opportunity to go deep. All the things that I don't have time for in a YouTube video, we save for the podcast. And I've got a really good topic for you today. We're talking about one of my favorite topics, which is mechanicals. And I have an expert with me today, a guy named Eric Ani that you're probably following on Instagram. He's better known as Mechanical Hub. But this is a fantastic episode where we're going to dive into deep into what it really means for both him and I for mechanicals that last. Today's Build Show is sponsored by Aqua Hose Bibs and Nuvo H2O. Let's get going. Hey guys, if you're not familiar with Aqua, they are a really cool family-owned company that makes a super sleek hose bib. Now, the thing that immediately struck out to me on these hose bibs is the looks. They're really beautiful. It's a hose bib that is, of course, frostproof, and they make them in a bunch of different sizes, everything from very small, like 2-inch increments, all the way up to 12-inch deep, meaning the shutoff is anywhere from 2 to maybe 1 foot deep into your house. So even in the very coldest climates, you could use them. But what's different about these is they're actually made of stainless steel. And if you're familiar, stainless is not very conductive, which means that you're not going to have condensation issues like you might have with a brass or a copper shutoff. So very, very cool product. To learn more, you can check out Aqua Hose Bibs. If you just Google that, you'll get right to their site. I also want to make mention of our other sponsor for today's podcast, which is Nuvo H2O. This is a citrus-based water softener system that I came across because my wife does not like soft water. She doesn't like the feeling of the soap that never kind of seems to get off your skin. But water softeners, as you know, are terrific for your house. They preserve your plumbing. They help your tankless water heater not to scale up. That means that the dishwasher seals stay intact and you don't have issues. So this is a system that uses citric acid instead of the traditional salt. So we've got very little maintenance. We just need to replace a cartridge. And we're still going to have that traditional feel for our water. Learn more. Go check out Nuvo H2O. Very cool product. All right, guys. With that being said, let me introduce our guest, Eric Ani from Mechanical Hub. Eric, how are you today, brother?
I'm doing good, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Man, I appreciate you taking a few minutes for us. Now, Eric, give us your quick background. Where I always think of you in the Midwest, but I always forget exactly which town you're in.
Yeah, so I'm just about an hour north of Minneapolis in central Minnesota. So kind of right in the middle of the state, halfway up, down, right to left.
Gotcha. And how long you been in the trades, man? How long you been a mechanical contractor?
I almost hate to say it these days because it's getting to be a long time, but more than half, almost half my life, 22 years.
All right.
21.
Good deal. You just a couple shy of me. I've been, this is my 26th year actually in the construction industry now. It feels weird getting old, doesn't it?
You know what? Sure. Physically, mentally, all the same. But you know what's really, I've started to notice the last few years, and it maybe kind of goes along with the topic we're going to talk about today, is that I'm starting to work on and replace and fix and repair plumbing and heating systems that I installed way back when I started out.
No, so that's like, cool.
We're going like full life cycle now with stuff that I've worked on.
Yeah. I mean, when you think of, actually you tell me, I'm curious, when you think of what's the typical lifespan of a boiler, of a tankless water heater, of a, you know, forced air gas furnace, what do you think of? You know, how many years do you think the life cycle of one of those is?
You know, there's so many variables. And what the professional, like the answer I want to tell you is it depends.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is if we do the best quality install with the proper sized equipment and we're applying it exactly the way it was intended to be applied, and then we go all out on maintenance every year and, you know, we do all the right things. Boy, wouldn't that number be a lot longer than if we just, you know, dump it and run and say, here you go. Thanks. You know, pay my bill and I'll see you later. So
set it and forget it.
I don't know.
I've always kind of thought that water heaters, traditional water heaters, you know, normal tank water heaters, maybe 15 years, tankless, maybe 20, 25 years, boilers, 20, 25 years. Do you think those numbers are accurate?
You know, I think you're being a little generous in my kind of estimate. I always tell my customers, if a tank is 10 years or older, then we should probably not consider fixing it if we're there for some kind of problem. I just say, you know, the government mandates that these tanks have a 6-year warranty. So, you know, there are some cynical people that might believe that then they're made to last 6 years. So I say, you know, 10 years or so, that's what we see a lot of times out in the field, that they're starting to fail 10, 12 years.
That's interesting. This is kind of a side note, and I wasn't thinking about this, but have you ever seen the website waterheaterrescue.com?
Yeah.
I met the older gentleman who's a plumbing contractor in California that kind of started that website. And he has, and I can't remember the exact age, but he has a tank style water heater at his house that's like 50 years old, that's been going strong for that period of time. And I sat down with him, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and had a 2-hour conversation over a beer one time. This was actually at Joe Stiebrick's house, this famous building science guy in Boston. And he basically said that tanks these days are kind of designed for failure. This is traditional tank style water heaters. And his estimation was that if people did a really good anode rod job on a regular basis and used the really premium anode rods, and also bought a particular type of water heater that had some replaceable parts, burners, things like that, that he could get a relatively standard tank to last in the multiple decades. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Well, yeah, I think one of the biggest variables, though, when you're talking about tank water heaters, is not unlike tankless. It's the water quality. And then
good point.
When I opened it up, I said, you know, like if we apply the right product for the application, sometimes you're asking a lot of a standard tank water heater. If you have a house full of, let's say, 8 people versus 4 people, it's going to be working theoretically twice as hard. So, you know, in theory, in the right conditions, yeah, you could get these standard tank water heaters that we can go buy just about anywhere now. And so many of them are really the same thing with different names on them. Mm-hmm. You could get them to last 15, 20 years. I have no doubt, if you have great water quality and you're not like really overtaxing it.
So then let's talk about that. What do you do, or what have you done, when it comes to water quality and making sure that you're given whatever that is, tank or tankless, the best possible lifespan?
You know, it's very common in Minnesota here where we use salt-based water softeners. I know that those aren't allowed all throughout the country, mm-hmm. but I can speak to what I know. So we do a standard water quality test. I actually send my water tests into a local lab. Hmm. I don't have the right equipment, or really, I'll be honest, I'm not confident in my ability to test this stuff like so perfectly and recommend the right equipment based off of some sample I took out in the field when I'm in between jobs or things like that. So really, just to kind of streamline it, I take the proper sample in a glass jar, and I bring it right to my supply or my source where I buy my filtration equipment from. And then we go from there. I think that's the best thing to do.
That's really cool. What a great idea. I have not thought about that before. That is awesome. And are they doing that testing there? Or are they sending it to a lab? Do you know of any bigger companies that you could buy a test kit and send it off in the mail to anybody?
Well, a lot of these manufacturers, you know, like probably your sponsor for the show here, or other softeners, filtration manufacturers, offer some type of testing. Where I source my equipment from, it's a local company that's assembling everything on site using, you know, components that they buy wholesale.
Okay.
That's very common. That's a very common situation throughout the country. Most plumbers that aren't making their own equipment, they're buying it from a similar situation that I am. So in my particular case, they're doing the testing right there on site. They don't have to take it across town. They don't have to send it anywhere. It's critical to get a water sample, clean water. So if you're on a well, you got to run the water for a little while. If you're on city, you want to make sure it's also, you know, been ran for a little while, and then you're getting it before it goes through any type of equipment that mm-hmm. might be on site. So mm-hmm. if there is a sediment filter, if there is a softener in place, you want to get that sample before anything there. And then you want to put it in a clean glass jar, like a reusable jar is fine. I just happen to carry those little teeny tiny, like, I think they're like half pint canning jars. That's what I smart. Use. And then I just kind of, I speed it over to my testing site. And the reason why I do that is I don't want it sitting there too long. I don't want it in the sun or, you know, in the wintertime, I can't have it freezing in my van or something like that. It's critical to get that sample tested as soon as possible. So really I'm just speeding it across town, getting it tested. I'm getting it to them right away. So I don't freeze it in my truck in the wintertime or let it sit in the sun or something like that, which can affect really the results overall.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then when you get those water quality tests back, what kinds of things are you doing with that? Is that filtration? Is that softening? Are there other things that you're looking for? And how does that potentially help that equipment last longer?
Well, a couple things. So let me start by saying I'm not like the foremost expert on water conditioning, but I've been doing this for a long time. So I've got experience with what is typically needed in my area. And what we're looking for is hardness, iron. Those are going to be the two main things. Mm-hmm. And then we've got some areas of our, in the metro area, we've got manganese that is present in the water. That's going to be filtered out with an iron filter or a special filter. And then in northern Minnesota, if we get into some of our areas where people have like lake home weekend cabins, stuff like that, we get into some areas that have high alkalinity. So we might have to put in an alkaline filter that changes the pH in the water to get it a little bit safer for your standard plumbing equipment, piping, and things like that.
Interesting. And does that change? Does what you find out in that water quality change at all your options for piping? My assumption is, Eric, you're really not typically doing new construction work. Is that right? You're doing more service and retrofit work?
I am, yeah. But I did, years ago I did new construction. But the great thing about Minnesota, I'll say this, is you're going to find kind of what we might say is kind of tough or hard, bad water all over the country, right? In pockets. Yeah. But overall, for the most part here in Minnesota, we're just dealing with hardness levels and then iron. Those are the two things that we have to deal with. Scale isn't a really big issue. So calcium, magnesium is going to be really the only thing we're up against at lower levels. So piping in Minnesota, you see your typical copper in older homes that would have probably replaced iron pipe, of, you know, galvanized pipe at one point in time. And then, of course, moving forward, it's a PEX nation. That's the way it is. Everything is being piped in PEX, as far as I know, even in, you know, especially retrofit, but for sure new construction.
I love it. I use a lot in new construction. I put Uponor PEX at my house. I did a pretty interesting method that I tried to reduce as few fittings as possible in my house. I had both Gary Klein and Uponor do a layout for me, and I absolutely think it's a fantastic system. I love it. Big fan. Let's go back to mechanicals that last, though, because I think this water quality is interesting. But let's talk about equipment quality as well. Eric, in your 22, 23 years, my assumption is you've seen all kinds of equipment, from the basic supply house where there's 500 of this model on the shelf, to the rare imported from somewhere else type equipment. If you could put anything in your house that you're building for your family next week under construction, what would you put in? For mechanicals, for something to make hot water, something to make radiant heat, what are your favorites? And it doesn't necessarily have to be a brand. Maybe it could be some attributes.
Yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, when you get into, if you're looking at quality, you're definitely looking at things that are obviously well built but easy to service. So mm-hmm. I think that service aspect I think it gets grouped into the wrong category. I think service is its own category, sure, but it matters a lot when I look at what is one piece of equipment better than the other. So I group it into that category of quality. Material wise, when you're looking at heating, whether you're heating water for domestic use or you're heating water to for space heating or you're heating air, you know, stainless steel is shown to be really quite an amazing material because these manufacturers really can work with it a lot better than they've ever been able to in the past. Mm-hmm. The forming of sheet metal made out of stainless steel seems to be a lot more, it's just, they've got the right equipment to do it. So they can produce equipment that's going to last a lot longer than that stainless steel. It's less susceptible to corrosion. It's a little heavier weight. So you're looking at thicker materials, things like that. Especially when we're looking at boilers. So up here in the Midwest, up in our northern, you know, United States, especially up in the Northeast, boiler systems for space heating are super common. And forever and ever, you couldn't go wrong with a cast iron boiler. So mm-hmm. the heat exchanger, the engine of the boiler itself, made out of cast iron. Those boilers will last 30, 40 plus years, no problem. Now we're putting boilers in that aren't likely to last that long, but the ones that are lasting the longest, the ones that are maybe going to serve the owner the longest are going to be easy to service, and they're probably going to be made out of stainless steel. So that brings it back to that stainless steel again. We even see tank water heaters that are made out of stainless steel, and with some tank water heaters are made out of plastic, of all things. So
yeah, interesting.
There's a lot of variety out there for sure.
What do you think of those plastic tanks? That's gosh, I forget the it's the Marathon by is that Rheem that makes the Marathon that's the plastic tank?
Yeah, so actually, funny story. Well, it's not funny at all to me. A plumber, it would be. They're made right here in Minnesota, but originally they were Marathon water heaters.
Uh huh.
And then Rheem, the just guy, you know, gigantic,
know that.
You know, company came in and bought them. And they're still made right here. Pretty fabulous process. I've toured it. I wish you could get that stuff on camera. You know, they never want you to bring the camera in, mm-hmm. but really cool. Yeah. So they're cool. They're very common here in Minnesota because we have low or more affordable electric rates, and then programs, discounts, things like that, that make electric resistance heating, whether it's for domestic or for space heating, more affordable. So we see those plastic tanks, the Marathon tanks, a lot.
There's another stainless tank manufacturer that I am blanking on the name. I was about to Google search it. Maybe you know it. That makes a whole line of probably mostly commercial grade stainless tanks. Do you know who I'm talking about?
You're not thinking HTP?
That's it. Heat Transfer Products. I couldn't think of it. Have you ever put an HTP in before?
Yeah, so they make a variety of products. I've put in a couple HTP water heaters and also a couple of their tank water heaters that double as space heating appliances as well.
Like the Phoenix, I think, is their one of their brands that's a really high output, like 200,000 BTU burner on a 50 or 75 gallon tank. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah. Yeah. So then there's a side, you know, a heat exchanger that produces domestic and heat exchanger that are, you know, your tank for domestic and then a heat exchanger for space heating. So it's a pretty cool system.
Yeah. That's a serious tank right there. That's not your average tank water heater, is it?
No, not at all. A lot more technical, going to require a lot more knowledge and follow up with maintenance, stuff like that.
And I think that there's also the A. O. Smith Vertex line, which is kind of a less expensive version of those HTPs. Have you ever put one of those in before?
I have. Those things are pretty crazy. They have that. They have a totally different kind of burner system than any other water heater on the market. So it like fires from the top down, and those burners are like 3-4 feet tall. They're really kind of impressive. I have put those in. Pretty cool.
I've put several of those in and they've done well for me. I had one that had a service call, no hot water after not very long in the house. But I got to say, A. O. Smith did a great job of correcting it very quickly with that customer through my plumber. So my sample set is quite low after only having put in maybe 5 or 6 over the years, but so far so good. How about heat pump water heaters? Have you ever put any heat pump water heaters in your houses?
You know, so early on, I'd say early on, because when I started seeing them come into the marketplace or being marketed, that was maybe what, 10
about 10 years ago,
let's say.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think it took us a little while here in the upper Midwest to realize that, yeah, they're usable appliances, but they're a little less welcomed in people's homes because of the whole aspect where they're cooling it down with the dehumidification. Mm-hmm. And then, the noise and the early models, the noise that they made were a little less acceptable too. So like I just haven't seen them become adopted here. A lot of that has to do with climate. If you live in a really warm climate or a really humid climate,
perfect,
which yeah, they're perfect. Minnesota has that for, you know, a few months of the year, but our winters being, you know, 7-8 months long.
Yeah.
It's tough. It goes against kind of the thought process that I'm going to use the heat in my house that I paid to create to then, you know, heat my water because we can't put anything outside.
Right.
So, you know, these things I think are great for southern climates. That would be my, you know, maybe people would say I'm not super educated on that, but that's my thought process on it.
Well, it's your bias too because of your climate, just like my bias for being a southern builder, and I'm usually thinking about hot and humid, so that's part of it. How about as we think about this topic of mechanicals at last, Eric, one of the things that I've been kind of wrestling with a little bit is this electric versus gas thing. You know, I feel like our country is moving more and more towards electrify everything, and when I visited Canada, gosh, pre-pandemic, I was in Vancouver for a solid week, Vancouver, British Columbia. They've only got until, I forget which year, 2025 or something, until they can't put in any more natural gas appliances in their houses. And even if you have a 50-year-old house, if your gas water heater goes out, that's it. Call the electrician. You're not allowed to put in another natural gas water heater. You have to switch to electric. What's your thoughts on that? Not necessarily from the environmental standpoint, but really more of the mechanicals that last standpoint. Have you seen Marathon water heaters or other electrical appliances last as long as their gas counterparts?
You know, in some cases, you brought up Marathon. That's a good example. They have, you know, so Marathon, Rheem warranties that product for a lifetime.
Is that right? Because I didn't realize that.
Yeah. But only to the original owner. So it's non-transferable. You get 15 years otherwise, which if you think about a warranty on a tank, 15 years is pretty long.
It's pretty long. Yeah. Compared to six, like you talked about earlier in the podcast.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a few ways to look at this from my perspective. Now, if I'm in a northern climate and I'm putting in boiler, you know, hydronic heating systems, we have this opportunity to put in now, because you said, you know, like, let's say in Minnesota, they're going to cut us off at a certain time. Mm-hmm. I would say now to put in the best boiler you possibly could, which I can name names, but I can tell you it's also, you know, it's imported, it's German, and it's made out of stainless steel. Mm-hmm. And then, but what's really cool with hydronic systems is we can put in what's called an indirect water heater. I don't know if you've ever seen any videos that I post about those, but or if you've seen them in your travels or
I haven't. Talk to me about that. I must have missed that.
Yeah. So an indirect water heater is basically like a tank with a heat exchanger built into it.
Okay.
And so we connect the boiler piping to the heat exchanger, but the tank is your domestic water, right? So the boiler heats this tank of water, but there's no burner. There's no electric elements, nothing right. like that.
There's just a copper tube in there.
So the boiler is your heat source. So, you know, we can put these things in that have, like, the tanks that I use for indirect water heaters have a lifetime warranty. Wow. They're made out of stainless steel. And so, like, I'm looking at, like, oh, there's these deadlines. I'd be like, ah, we got it. We'll put the best equipment we possibly can in, and we'll get probably, you know, decades of service out of it. Dang. But let's be honest. That's not going to work everywhere. It's not going to work in Texas to do that because you're not going to have a boiler system, mm-hmm. right?
No. Nope.
I think contractors and myself included, we need to be up to speed. Every one of us that has anything to do with this, you know, plumbers, HVAC, electricians, we need to get on this whole air source heat pump situation because mm-hmm. they can do so much with an air source heat pump to create domestic hot water, to do space heating. And, you know, I know we're talking about quality and mechanicals that are going to last, but I think we have to we have to start somewhere. Maybe this equipment isn't the most robust that in the marketplace out of all of the types of water heaters and space heating, but it really, it's the technology we're going to have to go to. That's what they're doing up in Vancouver for sure.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Vancouver's not that far from you really in the scheme of things compared to my flight from Texas to up there.
Yeah. They've got that great climate though, up in there, you know, that it's that Pacific Northwest, that it's almost, I forget, I don't know what the technical term is, but it's a lot warmer there.
Yeah, it's weird, even though they're more northern. Yeah.
Right. They're more, even though they're north of us.
They're more temperate there, aren't they? I don't know what they call that. It's something with the marine, the fact that they're close to the ocean helps temper that, I think. But
yeah.
That is going to be that'll be a whole nother podcast in the future when that happens. But honestly, I think it's in our lifetime, Eric, that we won't be able to connect to natural gas or use general fossil fuels. We're going to have to switch to electricity because we can make it ourselves with solar. We can, you know, use wind like we do a ton in Texas. There's a lot of interesting things. No matter where you fall in the political party lines, I think that most likely that will happen within our lifetime. You know, I'm not too much older than you, but I remember as a kid being drilled into me that we were going to run out of oil before too long. And this was, you know, in the 80s, they were talking about that when I was in elementary school. So I remember in the 80s thinking, gosh, I wonder what we're going to do when we run out of gasoline for our cars, because it's, you know, they're telling us that it's not too far along. Well, maybe we found some new sources or some new ways to drill, but there is a finite supply of those fossil fuels. And at some point, we will have to try and figure out how to transition to other fuels. Eric, I want to finish up here because I know we're both on a pipeline. As we think about mechanicals that last, you mentioned specifically that issue of serviceability. I think that's something that, as a builder, I think a little bit about, but not nearly as much as you, who are actually touching and know how to move and repair that equipment. What do people need to know, whether you're builders or homeowners, about serviceability? And is there anything that people can find out about that? And I'll just give a random example. You know, I had a domestic branded appliance package in my house, and I don't want to bash anybody in particular, but pretty much every appliance in my house over the 15 years since I remodeled it has been replaced. And several of them had been serviced multiple times before they were replaced. And recently I bought a oven microwave combo to replace the one that died. And the microwave went out on a almost brand new unit. And now I've been stranded at my house with an oven microwave combo that the microwave doesn't work. And even though it's a domestic manufacturer, they're telling me parts are not available and won't be available anytime soon. Is that same kind of crisis happening in the mechanical world and the service world? And how can people know if there's one brand that's more easily parts available than another?
You know, it's a great, great question. Thanks for asking. You know, how can people, like, what do people... Let's go to the beginning of your question or beginning of your statement. You know, like, what do people need to know about their house overall, like, for serviceability? I don't know how to get the message out, and the weight's on your shoulders with this one. But if you can convince people, my customers, your customers, our neighbors, our family, that our house is no different than a car, mm-hmm. except for you're not going to get rid of this house in a couple of years when the lease or the payments are up, right? Before there's the warranty on your house has got to be thought of differently than the warranty on your car.
That's right.
Okay. You do not drive your car for a year without changing the oil. Mm-hmm. You absolutely will have to get new tires at some point in time, right? So things in your house aren't very much different. Like, they're going to have to either be replaced because they wore out. That's your tires. They're going to have to be fixed or, hopefully not repaired, but hopefully they're going to have to be touched, serviced, you know, cleaned and made sure, checked on to make sure that they're operational. That's the service. So that's the oil change. So, like, how are we to a point now where people are spending the absolute most amount of money that they will ever exchange for anything mm-hmm. in their entire life. We're not talking about like Jeff Bezos building a rocket for $3 billion. We're talking about somebody building a house for $500,000.
Yep.
That's more money than some people will make in 10 years.
Yep.
And yet they just, it's like set it. And it's like the Ron Popeil
of set it
like,
and forget that's our
construct. Yeah.
Yep.
Like stop. We need to stop that mentality. Totally. We need to teach people like, look, this isn't maintenance free is such a terrible, terrible word because they apply it to everything. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we have this maintenance free soffits and siding and windows and like, gag me with a spoon here. This is terrible.
It is not maintenance free.
Yeah. So that's the start of it. But then you're like, you said like, okay, how do you know what you're buying or what's the right thing to buy? I don't think the answer is a specific brand. I have preferences on stuff that I like, but they're based off of a couple things. And what's most important, I think, from a contractor standpoint, who's going to sell this to a customer, can I get the parts I need to repair it when it fails? So what I'm saying is do I have local support and not only knowledge and somebody that may be able to come out and help me if I just hit a total roadblock or, and then what's really important is that local support. Do they stock parts for, you know, oven microwave combo in my area? Like I'm dealing with water heaters, you know, plumbing fixtures, you know, furnaces, boilers, that kind of stuff. I'm not going to buy something that's so fantastically special that I don't have parts available locally. And mm-hmm. so as a consumer, that's the questions you need to ask your contractor. You know, they might be if your contractor's honest, they're going to tell you, yeah, you know, we just started with this brand. We're not very, you know, it's new to us. But what does that, you know, does it mean that they have the support that they need? Because it's not just a contractor. Those contractors are going to come and go. The appliance is going to be in your house and you're going to love it or you're going to hate it for a lot longer than that contractor is going to probably be around or answer their phone. So know what you're buying and that it's, you know, serviced locally and there's support for it locally. I think that that's what's most important because that's not going to have, you're not going to come up with the same appliance brand or the same furnace or something everywhere, mm-hmm. everywhere in the country. It's going to be different. Every market's a little bit different. So
totally.
That's my answer. It's kind of, I hope it's not too vague, but
that's good.
I think that's what's important. You know, local service.
I'll translate that into my terms and I'll say, I often use the term reliability trumps efficiency. And I've said that on multiple occasions, what about HVAC equipment, about water heaters, about all kinds of things. And two quick examples. I built a house going on 10 years ago now that an architect really wanted some gee whiz appliances in the house and some things that weren't locally used very often and were kind of almost bleeding edge kind of technology. And I said to the customer, look, I'm worried that this awesome part, product, whatever, is going to have a problem. We're not going to be able to service it for you. And I'm glad that I had the conversation because 3 years later, when both his HVAC condensers and his water heater died, he was willing to pay for them because he remembered the conversation and he wanted to move forward with those when I wanted to do something else. So he had this hybrid tankless water heater. I can't even remember the brand, but the company went out of business after about 3-4 years. And it was a super cool concept, super efficient, provided tons of hot water and didn't have the hot water or cold water sandwich that can happen with tankless. It died. We replaced it. And then he had this crazy HVAC system that was bleeding edge and used water to help cool down the condenser evaporator on the outside to gain efficiency. And again, that got ripped out as well. And I had another client that same architect wanted to do that. And I gave him the same speech and he said, oh, okay, I agree with you. And we didn't do it. And I'm so thankful we didn't. So I'm kind of constantly in my own mind playing this game of, all right, I want the best, most efficient equipment, but I really want reliable because honestly, I'm selfish and I don't want callbacks. And I also don't want that client to go, oh, you told me to use this. I want you to pay for it if it doesn't work. Have you ever come across those kinds of situations at all in your career, Eric?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that I've been doing this now just long enough to have lived through events like that more than once in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. you know, where I have shifted gears and gone 180 degrees opposite direction of some brands that I was loyal to for a long time. And, or maybe not long enough, but just long enough to find out that I had made mistakes or choosing that, or it just wasn't a good experience, you know, call it whatever you want.
Yep.
You know, your Eternal Tankless is what
that's it. Eternal. I couldn't think of it. We could bash them since they're out of business. Eternal Tankless.
You know what? You know what it ended up being is you had to get parts for those things. Some company that made gas grills bought like the lot of
is that right?
parts. Yeah. Oh, and so like at the very end of it, like the very end, I had some customers that were calling me because I'm known in my area to be progressive. And I was using Tankless before a lot of others were. And they said, oh, you've got this Eternal thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I was finding parts from some company that made like gas grills. Like they bought all this. It's crazy, crazy stuff. But yeah.
We put a Phoenix in that house, by the way.
What's that?
We put a Phoenix in that house, by the way, an HTP Phoenix.
Yeah, I could see why. No, I'm passionate about the idea that you do have to look at what's available in your market. You don't want to have to go far to get parts. And what I say by that is, you know, in this age of the internet and whatnot, I could get parts online or I can get them shipped to me quickly. That's great, except for when it's, you know, a holiday and that's when things fail. You know, I'm not going to get stuff to me on a Friday night when it's 35 degrees below zero and every contractor, every supplier, everybody's busy, including myself. And so if I don't have the parts that I need in my, you know, possession, I have to rely on what's available locally. So that's how I think the end user should be looking at things. What's available locally.
Yeah. 100%. Eric, I'm bumping up on our ceiling on time, man. I really appreciate your time, brother. How can people follow you? Tell us your, it's Mechanical Hub on IG, right? But tell us how's that spelled. Are there other places where people can follow your work or see you or listen to your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find us. Our website is mechanical-hub.com. And so we're a media company focused on the end user, the contractor. So professional plumbing heating contractors. And then you can follow Instagram, like you said, Mechanical Hub, H-U-B, the word Mechanical Hub on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, you name it. All over the place. I really like Instagram. Seems to be the most fun for me.
Man, I like Instagram too. It's fun. You know what's fun about it is that there's like-minded people on Instagram. And I've just been thinking about this recently. I really like how I think you and I are like-minded, Eric, even though we do different jobs. You know, you're in a different trade than I am. I don't know how you voted in the last election. I don't know what your thoughts are on any hot button topic, but I know that you care about quality, that you care about working hard and giving your best every day. And you care about, and you're passionate about doing things right and doing things well so that your work will be lasting and enduring. And I think that's kind of the definition of craftsmanship, whether you're applying that to a cabinet or a crown molding or a water heater install or a PEX replacement job or whatever. I think it's that craftsmanship and that like-mindedness that bonds you and I and all the people that are listening to our podcast or Instagram feeds, whatever. And that cuts across all those boundaries, including nationalities, too. You know, I've got, in particular, I've got a friend who's a South Korean builder that I met at the International Builder Show a couple years ago, and I follow him on Instagram, and he doesn't even speak English. And I love seeing his work on Instagram because he's building houses with craftsmanship in South Korea, and it's a totally different style of building. And when I see him every couple years at the International Builder Show, we have a very special bond that comes from like-minded craftsmen, which I think is our bond as well, Eric. So thank you so much for all you do for our industry, for the care and thought that you put into your content, and for the generations of young plumbers and mechanical contractors that you're inspiring on your daily Instagram feed, as well as your podcast and all your other locations. So guys, go follow Eric at Mechanical Hub on IG and mechanical-hub.com online, plus subscribe to his podcast. And if you're not currently a subscriber to my relatively new podcast, we started this at the beginning of the year. We're publishing every single Friday. I'd love to have you follow along. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on the Build Show podcast.